this is the same fellow who told you this is going to end by Easter last time. This is the same fellow who told you that, don't worry, we're going to end this by the summer. We're about to go into a dark winter, and he has no clear plan, and there's no prospect that there's going to be a vaccine available for the majority of the American people before the middle of next year.
President Trump, your reaction, he says you have no plan.
I don't think we're going to have a dark winter at all.
I think an epidemic, either naturally caused or intentionally caused, is the most likely thing to cause, say, 10 million excess deaths. And that it's pretty surprising how little preparedness there is for it. As we've seen various flu scares come along, we haven't had a super good response. So the paradigmatic examples are smallpox for an intentionally caused thing, that there was a simulation called Dark Winter that didn't come out very well, i.e. smallpox scored one and humanity scored zero.
On June 22nd, 2001, United States government began Operation Dark Winter. Operation Dark Winter was not a war game. Instead, something more unusual. Dark Winter was a germ game. In 2001, the US military, government, and media launched a mock battle against pathology. The premise was simple. The bioterror organization released a deadly virus into the country, and smallpox is spreading quickly. The US government must now react to contain the outbreak and stop further harm. And when Operation Dark Winter ended 3 days later, a summary of recommendations were given to implement across different levels of government to better prepare in case of a future dark winter. But the dark winter never came. Instead, 4 months later, 9/11 struck the United States with a different type of fear, and the government and our focus shifted away from home to land conflicts in Iraq and Islamic terrorism abroad. But Dark Winter wasn't the last germ game. In Baltimore, Maryland, in a house 5 blocks south of the Capitol, in 2018, Operation Clad X began. The scenario was similar to Dark Winter. The simulation ran for 5 days. Day one began with preliminary reports and the government grappling to respond to uncertain information. Day three, the sickness was confirmed in the United States. Day five, the simulation ended. The process is fascinating, and there's a lot to dig into. But one interesting note is that Clad X was documented. There are recordings throughout the entire germ game, and I recommend you all dig through their archives to learn more. But now I want to play you a portion from that last day at the Clad X simulation. It's slow, but I ask you to pay close attention to what they're saying. It's important.
We are now 3 months since the last meeting, and the pandemic has rapidly worsened globally and in the United States. The number of cases and deaths are increasing exponentially.
Remember, this is a simulation.
Here is the current U.S. situation. Approximately 60 cases 3 months ago at the last meeting to nearly 60,000 cases now. Global markets have plummeted from its high 5 months ago, and the Fed is now projecting a deep economic recession. Many domestic hospitals are failing due to lack of staff and supplies. Telework and social distancing measures are being encouraged by the CDC. Schools across the country are closed, and many public gatherings have been canceled. Public demand for surgical masks and respirators far exceed the available supply. National Guard units in multiple states have been deployed to provide security for pharmacies and hospitals. Here is the global situation as best we can determine it. As you can see, Clad X is basically everywhere.
In 2017, Bill Gates gave a TED Talk titled, "The Next Pandemic, We're Not Ready." In his brief 20 minutes, he highlighted the US government spends billions of dollars to keep an active, scalable military ready for any conflict. This is a pragmatic response to a hostile world, and multiple measures are taken. Equipment is kept updated, reserves are paid, logistical operations practiced every day. But our global health response is weak. We've atrophied. We have little medical reserves, no active plans, and as certainly as war is a fact of human life, equally it's disease. Just because we don't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Now, part of the reason for this is that we've invested a huge amount in nuclear deterrence. But we've actually invested very little in a system to stop an epidemic. We're not ready.
On December 20th, 2019, a year after Clad X, China began to report a new form of coronavirus in the Hubei province. Transmission rate and mortality were unknown. However, in the following weeks, it would be called COVID-19.
The organization dubbed it COVID-19.
The increase in the number of cases continues, unabated. As a matter of fact, the rate of increase has gone up. That means the number of hospital beds.
A dark winter arrived. Coronavirus is now everywhere.
These epidemic events are getting more and more disruptive to health and to economy. And the reason we called it Event 201 is we knew eventually one of these days, one of those events would be the big one. And that big one would really challenge our capacity to respond. And to respond to the big one, we do need to have all hands on deck. I think if we're honest with ourselves, collectively, the international community has never done enough to respond to global health security challenges. That we knew before COVID that the world was underprepared for biological risk. If we are going to get ready, we need to have operationalized and integrated public-private cooperation that we haven't seen before.
In 2001, a real-world exercise tested the emergency response to a bioterror attack on the continental United States. The operation was called Dark Winter. Within just a few days, the simulation spiraled out of control. The operation predicted a rapid breakdown in essential institutions, civil disorder, and massive civilian casualties. Dark Winter has revealed how vulnerable we've become. Our lifestyle, our security, our safety, depends on a delicate and unstable economy. We've created a system so complicated that we no longer understand how to control it. Oil, power, shipping, transport. We live in a complex world. And the more complex it gets, the more fragile it becomes. The system is built on a global supply chain that gets things where they're needed, just in time. We've created a house of cards. Remove just one, and everything falls apart. And what's fueling the system?
Money. Did you know that a flu virus can survive on the surface of a banknote for up to 17 days? One day, there will be a pandemic. It could begin during the crush of Black Friday sales. A pathogen will jump from tainted banknotes to human skin, onto food, toys, children, and loved ones. By the time Patient Zero feels the first sore throat, millions of people will already be infected.
Our complex world is primed for breakdown.
And once the chaos strikes,
there won't be resources to save us all.
The only question left is, what will it take to save what remains?
Welcome, Mr. Bill Gates. We also face a new threat that the next epidemic has a good chance of originating on a computer screen of a terrorist intent on using genetic engineering to create a synthetic version of the smallpox virus or a contagious and highly deadly strain of flu. So the point is that we ignore the strong link between health security and international security at our peril. Whether it occurs by the quirk of nature or at the hand of a terrorist, Epidemiologists show through their models that a respiratory spread pathogen would kill more than 30 million people in less than a year. And there is a reasonable probability of that taking place in the years ahead. This is also where we see many epidemics starting.
In this year's annual letter, Melinda and I take the toughest questions we get asked and give our answers. One that's come up for a long time is, as we make the world healthier, is the population going to get so big that feeding everybody and maintaining the environment is going to be impossible? Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary. We go from less than a billion in 1800, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.4 billion, where we are today, is happening even faster. So Melinda and I wondered whether providing new medicines and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem? What we found out is that as health improves, families choose to have less children. And this effect is very, very dramatic. We find that in every country of the world, this is repeated. The population growth goes down as we improve health. So we've taken that chart that shows the global population growth, and we've actually extended it out all the way to 2100. And we can see that instead of continuing, it actually flattens out. Another way to see that is through this rate of population growth. And you can see that in the 60s, that reached a pretty high number, over 2% per year, and it's now come way, way down. Now, 11 billion people, still a lot, but the good news is that the faster we improve health, the faster family size goes down, and so we can feel great about saving those lives.
And herein lies the dilemma that we all face. Let me illustrate. Improved public health has caused the world's infant mortality rate to decline by 60% over the last 40 years. In the same period, the world's average life expectancy has increased from 46 years in 1950s to 63 years today. This is a development which, as individuals, we can only applaud. However, the result of these positive measures is a world population that has risen during the same short period of time geometrically to almost 6 billion people and could easily exceed 8 billion by the year 2020. The negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems is becoming appallingly evident.
$10 billion. I mean, just speak about the magnitude of that. That is by far the biggest commitment of the foundation, isn't it, Bill? I mean, this is by far the largest.
That's right. We've been spending a lot on vaccines, so we need the governments, both in rich and poor countries, to come along. But millions of lives have been saved. With this commitment, over 8 million additional lives will be saved. So it's one of the most effective ways that health in the poorest countries can be dramatically improved.